Good morning, folks. You are listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, Central Vermont Community Radio at 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM. And happy Saturday, everyone. It is Amy's Kids Show. It's time. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and we are waking up with the chickens, and we're waking up with a lot of fog here. In Central Vermont, we've had a lot of rain, and now it's hot and muggy, and it is a beautiful summer day, and I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be here at WGDR in the station, and here to have some fun, guys. I found some really, really awesome music again to celebrate this time of year, to celebrate everything we've been celebrating on Amy's Kids Show. We're going to have some vegetable songs, a farmer's market song, but the theme here, even with the vegetables, you're going to find is very interesting. We have a bigger theme going on, guys. We've been learning about our brains, and we've been learning about the parts of the brain, and we've been celebrating mammal brains especially, right? That's that second layer of our brains that humans have. We share this part with all the mammals on the planet. And what do mammals like to do? Well, they like to be together, a lot of them, right? And they like to have relationships with each other, and they like to be part of the group and part of the herd. And sometimes when we're not part of the group or part of the herd, it can get kind of lonely. So we've even got a song about lonely peas. We've got a lot of really fun things going on, but don't worry, because the peas get a chance in the next song. So that's kind of the theme, because we've been reading A Wrinkle in Time, and we've been following Meg on her adventures, and boy, she feels like a lonely pea. When we start the story, she's just so unhappy with herself. She's taking everything, as her brother Sandy says it, too personally. Her twin brothers, Dennis and Sandy, you know, they're pretty cool. They've been growing a garden, and we're going to learn a little bit more about their garden. We're going to maybe trample through it in today's chapter. And so they're growing all kinds of good vegetables. And in today's chapter, Mrs. Murray, their mother, Meg's mother, and the twins' mother, and Charles Wallace's mother, she's going to make some stew, probably out of all those great vegetables. And that's going to fuel up all the kids, because they're about to go on a big adventure. So this is a very exciting chapter today. It's where Meg finds that she's not alone, and she finds some company, and she finds out that she is a pretty cool person, or she begins to find that out. So I hope you're doing the same thing today, realizing how cool you are and staying cool. It's a little bit warm today, so it's a good day to sort of start out slow with a bit of a story and some fun songs. Let's celebrate summer, guys. I'm so happy you're here. Happy Saturday.
Bees are buzzing, happy 'cause there's no more rain. Summer's here. Here come my cousins, they drove all the way from Maine. Summer's here. We've been waiting oh so splashing and splashing, yeah. Marco Polo in the pool. Summer's here. Check out this fashion, bare feet and shorts, we're keeping cool.
Joe cool.
There's no school.
No school.
We got tons of time to play. In the sunshine on a clear, hot, perfect day.
Is finally here.
Everybody's out in the sunshine. Everybody's having a good time. Everything is great 'cause summer's here.
silver nutmeg and a golden pear alone. Alone the nights in June when my tree began to bloom, I saw in front of me a guy just like the Queen of May.
To my surprise, she was to be.
Welcome back. Weren't those were some great songs, weren't they? I had a couple of love songs in there, actually, romantic songs, and you're about to find out why. Because today, we're going to read Chapter 3 from A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. And we've been reading this story, and I gave a bunch of names in the beginning of the show today, a bunch of names of characters from the story, and I hope I didn't overwhelm some people, because it's actually very simple. I just threw a bunch of names out at once, but let's break it down. There are only a few key characters in this story that we have to keep track of. First of all, there are the three magical characters who we've begun to meet. So far, we've met Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, so Mrs. What's-It shows up all dressed in different clothes and stuff and layers, and Mrs. Who likes to give quotes. We met her last week. She quotes from all kinds of people through history. And we're about to meet Mrs. Witch. So that's the name of this chapter today, number 3, Mrs. Witch. And then there's, of course, Meg, who is our lead character, her little brother, Charles Wallace. And then they have two twin brothers, too. They also have a mother named Mrs. Murray, and they just met Kelvin, at the magical character's house, the haunted house, so-called. And so they've just met Kelvin, and they're about to bring him home for dinner. So here we go. In the forest, evening was already beginning to fall, and they walked in silence. Charles and Fortinbras gambled on ahead. Fortinbras is the dog. I did forget Fortinbras, sorry. Kelvin walked with Meg, his fingers barely touching her arm in a protective gesture. This has been the most impossible, the most confusing afternoon of my life, she thought. Yet I don't feel confused or upset anymore. I only feel happy. Why? Maybe we weren't meant to meet before this, Kelvin said. I mean, I knew who you were in school and everything, but I didn't know you. I'm glad we've met now, Meg. We're going to be friends, you know. I'm glad, too, Meg whispered, and they were silent again. When they got back to the house, Mrs. Murray was still in the lab. She was watching a pale blue fluid move slowly through a tube from a beaker to a retort. Over a Bunsen burner bubbled a big earthenware dish of stew. Don't tell Sandy and Dennis I'm cooking out here, she said. They're always suspicious that a few chemicals may get in with the meat, but I had an experiment I wanted to stay with. This is Kelvin O'Keefe, Mother, Meg said. Is there enough for him, too? It smells super. Hello, Kelvin, Mrs. Murray shook hands with him. Nice to meet you. We aren't having anything but stew tonight, but it's a good thick one. Sounds wonderful to me, Kelvin said. May I use your phone so my mother will know where I am? Of course. Show him where it is, will you please, Meg? I won't ask you to use the one out here, if you don't mind. I'd like to finish up this experiment. Meg led the way into the house. Charles Wallace and Fortinbras had gone off. Outdoors, she could hear Sandy and Dennis, their twin brothers, hammering at the fort they were building up in one of the maple trees. This way, Meg went through the kitchen and into the living room. I don't know why I call her when I don't come home, Kelvin said, his voice a little bitter. She wouldn't notice. He sighed and dialed. Ma, he said. Oh, Hinky. Tell Ma I won't be home till late. Now don't forget. I don't want to be locked out again. He hung up, looked at Meg. Do you know how lucky you are? She smiled rather wryly. Not most of the time. A mother like that? A house like this? Gee, your mother's gorgeous. You should see my mother. She had all her upper teeth taken out, and Pop got her a plate, but she won't wear it. And most days, she doesn't even comb her hair. Not that it makes much difference when she does. He clenched his fists. But I love her. That's the funny part of it. I love them all, and they don't give a hoot about me. Maybe that's why I call when I'm not going to be home, because I care. Nobody else does. You don't know how lucky you are to be so loved. Meg said in a startled way, I guess I never thought of that. I guess I just took it for granted. Kelvin looked somber. Then his enormous smile lit up his face again. Things are going to happen, Meg. Good things. I feel it. He began wandering, still slowly, around the pleasant, if shabby, living room. He stopped before a picture on the piano of a small group of men standing together on a beach. Who's this? Oh, a bunch of scientists. Where? Meg went over to the picture. Cape Canaveral. This one's father. Which? Here. The one with the glasses? Yep, the one who needs a haircut, Meg giggled, forgetting her worries in her pleasure at showing Kelvin the picture. His hair is sort of the same color as mine, and he keeps forgetting to have it cut. Mother usually ends up doing it for him. She bought clippers and stuff because he won't take the time to go to the barber. Kelvin studied the picture. I like him, he announced judiciously. Looks kind of like Charles Wallace, doesn't he? Meg laughed again. When Charles was a baby, he looked exactly like father. It was really funny. Kelvin continued to look at the picture. He's not handsome or anything, but I like him. Meg was indignant. He is too handsome. Kelvin shook his head. Nah, he's tall and skinny like me. Well, I think you're handsome, Meg said. Father's eyes are kind of like yours too, you know, really blue. Only you don't notice his as much because of his glasses. Where is he now? Meg stiffened. But she didn't have to answer because the door from the lab to the kitchen slammed and Mrs. Murray came in carrying a dish of stew. Now, she called, I'll finish this up properly on the stove. Have you done your homework, Meg? Not quite, Meg said, going back into the kitchen. Then I'm sure Kelvin won't mind if you finish up before dinner. Sure, go ahead, Kelvin fished in his pocket and pulled out a wad of folded paper. As a matter of fact, I have some junk of mine to finish up. Math. That's the one thing I have a hard time keeping up with. I'm okay on everything having to do with words, but I don't do as well with numbers. Mrs. Murray smiled. Why don't you get Meg to help you? But see, I'm several grades above Meg, Kelvin said. Try asking her to help you with your math anyhow, Mrs. Murray suggested. Well, sure, Kelvin said. Here, but it's pretty complicated. Meg smoothed out the paper and studied it. Do they care how you do it? She asked. I mean, can you work it out on your own? Well, sure, as long as I understand and get the answers right. Well, we have to do it their way. Now look, Kelvin, don't you see how much easier it would be if you did it this way? Her pencil flew over the paper. Hey, Kelvin said. Hey, I think I get it. Show me once more on another one. Again, Meg's pencil was busy. All you have to remember is that every ordinary fraction can be converted into an infinite periodic decimal fraction. See? So 3/7 is 0.428571. This is the craziest family, Kelvin grinned at her. I suppose I should stop being surprised by now, but you're supposed to be dumb in school, always being called on the carpet. Oh, I am, said Meg. The trouble with Meg and math, Mrs. Murray said briskly, is that Meg and her father used to play with numbers, and Meg learned far too many shortcuts. So when they want her to do problems the long way around at school, she gets sullen and stubborn and sets up a fine mental block for herself. Are there any more morons like Meg and Charles around? Kelvin asked. If so, I should meet more of them. It might also help if Meg's handwriting were legible, Mrs. Murray said. With a good deal of difficulty, I can usually decipher it. But I doubt very much of her teachers can or are willing to take the time. I'm planning on giving her a typewriter for Christmas. That may be a help. If I get anything right, nobody'll believe it's me, Meg said. What's a megaparsec? Kelvin asked. One of Father's nicknames for me, Meg said. It's also 3.26 million light years. What's E equals MC squared? Einstein's equation. What's E stand for? Energy. M? Mass. C squared. The square of the velocity of light in centimeters per second. By what countries is Peru bounded? I haven't the faintest idea. I think it's in South America somewhere. What's the capital of New York? Well, New York City, of course. Who wrote Boswell's Life of Johnson? Oh, Kelvin, I'm not any good at English. Kelvin groaned and turned to Mrs. Murray. I see what you mean. Her, I wouldn't want to teach. She's a little one-sided, I grant you, Mrs. Murray said, though I blame her father and myself for that. She still enjoys playing with her doll's house, though. Mother! Meg shrieked in agony. Oh, darling, I'm sorry, Mrs. Murray said swiftly, but I'm sure Kelvin understands what I mean. With a sudden, enthusiastic gesture, Kelvin flung his arms out wide, as though he were embracing Meg and her mother and the whole house. How did this happen? Isn't it wonderful? I feel as though I were just being born. I'm not alone anymore. Do you realize what that means to me? But you're good at basketball and things, Meg protested. You're good in school. Everybody likes you. For all the most unimportant reasons, Kelvin said. There hasn't been anybody in the world I could talk to. Sure, I can function on the same level as everybody else. I can hold myself down, but it isn't me. Meg took a batch of forks from the drawer and turned them over and over, looking at them. I'm all confused again. Oh, so am I, Kelvin said gaily. But now at least I know we're going somewhere. Meg was pleased and a little surprised when the twins were excited at having Kelvin for supper. They knew more about his athletic record and were far more impressed by it than she. Kelvin ate 5 bowls of stew, 3 saucers of Jell-O, and a dozen cookies, and then Charles Wallace insisted that Kelvin take him up to bed and read to him. The twins, who had finished their homework, were allowed to watch half an hour of TV. Meg helped her mother with the dishes and then sat at the table and struggled with her homework, but she could not concentrate. "Mother, are you upset?" she asked suddenly. Mrs. Murray looked up from a copy of an English scientific magazine through which she was leafing. For a moment, she did not speak. Then, "Yes." "Why?" Again, Mrs. Murray paused. She held her hands out and looked at them. They were long and strong and beautiful. She touched with the fingers of her right hand the broad gold band on the 3rd finger of her left hand. "I'm still quite a young woman, you know," she said finally. "Though I realize that it's difficult for you children to conceive, and I'm still very much in love with your father. I miss him quite dreadfully." "And you think all this has something to do with father?" "I think it must have." "But what?" Meg asked. "That I don't know, but it seems the only explanation." "Do you think things always have an explanation?" Meg asked. "Yes, I believe that they do. But I think that with our human limitations, we're not always able to understand the explanations. But you see, Meg, just because we don't understand doesn't mean that the explanation doesn't exist." "I like to understand things," Meg said. "We all do, but it isn't always possible. Charles Wallace understands more than the rest of us, doesn't he?"
"Yes."
"Why?" "I suppose because he's... well, because he's different, Meg."
"Different how?"
"I'm not quite sure. You know yourself, he's not like anybody else." "No, and I wouldn't want him to be," Meg said defensively.
"Wanting doesn't have anything to do with it. Charles Wallace is what he is. Different. New."
"New?"
"Yes, that's what your father and I feel."
Meg twisted her pencil so hard that it broke. She laughed. "I'm sorry. I'm really not being destructive. I'm just trying to get things straight."
"I know."
"But Charles Wallace doesn't look different from anybody else."
"No, Meg, but people are more than just the way they look. Charles Wallace's difference isn't physical. It's in essence."
Meg sighed heavily, took off her glasses, and twirled them and put them back on again. "Well, I know Charles Wallace is different. And I know he's something more. I guess I'll just have to accept it without understanding it." Mrs. Murray smiled at her. "Maybe that's really the point I was trying to put across."
"Yeah," Meg said dubiously.
Her mother smiled again. "Maybe that's why our visitor last night didn't upset me. Maybe that's why I'm able to have a willing suspension of disbelief. Because of Charles Wallace."
"Are you like Charles?" Meg asked.
"I? Heavens, no. I'm blessed with more brains and opportunities than most people, but there's nothing about me that breaks out of the ordinary mold."
"Your looks do," Meg said.
Mrs. Murray laughed. "You just haven't had enough basis for comparison, Meg. I'm very ordinary, really." Kelvin O'Keefe, coming in then, said, "Ha ha."
"Charles all settled?" Mrs. Murray asked.
"Yes." "What did you read to him?"
"Genesis. His choice. By the way, what kind of an experiment were you working on this afternoon, Mrs. Murray?"
"Oh, something my husband and I were cooking up together. I don't want to be too far behind him when he gets back."
"Mother," Meg pursued, "Charles says I'm not the one thing or the other. Not flesh nor fowl nor good red herring."
"Oh, for crying out loud," Kelvin said. "You're Meg, aren't you? Come on and let's go for a walk."
But Meg was still not satisfied.
"And what do you make of Kelvin?" she demanded of her mother.
Mrs. Murray laughed. "I don't want to make anything of Kelvin. I like him very much, and I'm delighted that he's found his way here."
"Mother, you were going to tell me about a tesseract."
"Yes, A troubled look came into Mrs. Murray's eyes. But not now, Meg, not now. Go out for that walk with Kelvin. I'm going to go upstairs and kiss Charles, and then I have to see that the twins get to bed. Outdoors, the grass was wet with dew. The moon was halfway up and dimmed the stars for a great arc. Kelvin reached out and took Meg's hand with a gesture as simple and friendly as Charles Wallace's. "Are you upsetting your mother?" he asked gently. "I don't think I was, but she is upset." "What about?" "Father." Kelvin led Meg across the lawn. The shadows of the trees were long and twisted, and there was a heavy, sweet, autumnal smell to the air. Meg stumbled as the land sloped suddenly downhill, but Kelvin's strong hand steadied her. They walked carefully across the twins' vegetable garden, picking their way through rows of cabbages, beets, broccoli, pumpkins. Looming on their left were the tall stalks of corn. Ahead of them was a small apple orchard, bounded by a stone wall, and beyond this, the woods through which they had walked that afternoon. Kelvin led the way to the wall, and then they sat there, his red hair shining silver in the moonlight, his body dappled with the patterns from the tangle of branches. He reached up, pulled an apple off a gnarled limb, and handed it to Meg, and then picked one for himself. "Tell me about your father." "He's a physicist." "Sure, we all know that. And he's supposed to have left your mother and gone off with some dame?" Meg jerked up from the stone on which she was perched, but Kelvin grabbed her by the wrist and pulled her back down. "Hold it, kid. I didn't say anything you hadn't heard already, did I?" "No," Meg said, but continued to pull away. "Let me go." "Come on, calm down. You know it isn't true. I know it isn't true. And how anybody, after taking one look at your mother, could believe any man would leave her for another woman just shows how far jealousy will make people go, right?" "I guess so," Meg said, but her happiness had fled, and she was back on in a morass of anger and resentment. "Look, dope," Kelvin shook her gently. "I just want to get things straight, sort of sort out the facts from the fiction. Your father's a physicist. That's a fact, right?"
"Yes."
"He's a PhD several times over?"
"Yes."
"Most of the time he works alone, but some of the time he was at the Institute for Higher Learning in Princeton, correct?"
"Yes."
"Then he did some work for the government, didn't he?"
"Yes."
"You take it from there. That's all I know." "That's about all I know, too," Meg said. "Maybe Mother knows more. I don't know. What he did was, well, it was what they call classified."
"Top secret, you mean?"
"That's right."
"And you don't even have any idea what it was about?"
Meg shook her head. "No, not really. Just an idea because of where he was."
"Well, where?"
"Out in New Mexico for a while. We were there with him, and then he was in Florida at Cape Canaveral, and we were there with him, too. And then he was going to be traveling a lot, so we came here."
"You'd always had this house?"
"Yes, but we used to live in it just in the summer."
"And you don't know where your father was sent?"
"No. At first we got lots of letters. Mother and father always wrote each other every day. I think Mother still writes him every night. Every once in a while, the postmistress makes some kind of crack about all her letters. I suppose they think she's pursuing him or something," Kelvin said, rather bitterly. "They can't understand plain, ordinary love when they see it. Well, go on. What happened next?"
"Nothing happened," Meg said. "That's the trouble."
"Well, what about your father's letters?"
"They just stopped coming."
"You haven't heard anything at all?"
"No," Meg said, "nothing." Her voice was heavy with misery. Silence fell between them, as tangible as the dark tree shadows that fell across their laps, and that now seemed to rest upon them as heavily as though they possessed a measurable weight of their own. At last, Kelvin spoke in a dry, unemotional voice, not looking at Meg. "Do you think he could be dead?" Again, Meg leaped up, and again, Kelvin pulled her down.
"No, they haven't told us he's dead, and they would. There's always a telegram or something. They always tell you."
"What do they tell you? Meg choked down a sob, managing to speak over it. Oh, Kelvin, Mother's tried and tried to find out. She's been down to Washington and everything. And all they'll say is that he's on a secret and dangerous mission, and she can be very proud of him, but he won't be able to communicate with us for a while, and they'll give us news as soon as they have it. Meg, don't get mad, but do you think maybe they don't know? A slow tear trickled down Meg's face. That's what I'm afraid of. Why don't you cry? Kelvin asked gently. You're just crazy about your father, aren't you? Go ahead and cry. It'll do you good. Meg's voice came out trembling over tears. I cry much too much. I should be more like Mother. I should be able to control myself. Your mother's a completely different person, and she's a lot older than you are. I wish I were a different person, Meg said shakily. I hate myself. Kelvin reached over and took off her glasses. Then he pulled a handkerchief out of his pocket and wiped her tears. This gesture of tenderness undid her completely, and she put her head down on her knees and sobbed. Kelvin sat quietly beside her, every once in a while patting her head. I'm sorry, she sobbed finally. I'm terribly sorry. Now you'll hate me. Oh, Meg, you are a moron, Kelvin said. Don't you know you're the nicest thing that's happened to me in a long time? Meg raised her head, and moonlight shone in her tear-stained face. Without the glasses, her eyes were unexpectedly beautiful. If Charles Wallace is a sport, I think I'm a biological mistake. Moonlight flashed against her braces as she spoke. Now she was waiting to be contradicted. But Kelvin said, Do you know that this is the first time I've seen you without your glasses? I'm blind as a bat without them. I'm nearsighted like Father. Well, you know what? You've got dreamboat eyes, Kelvin said. Listen, you go right on wearing your glasses. I don't think I want anybody else to see what gorgeous eyes you have. Meg smiled with pleasure. She could feel herself blushing, and she wondered if the blush would be visible in the moonlight. Okay, hold it, you two, came a voice out of the shadows. Charles Wallace stepped into the moonlight. I wasn't spying on you, he said quickly, and I hate to break things up, but this is it, kids, this is it. His voice quivered with excitement. This is what? Kelvin asked. We're going. Going? Where? Meg reached out and instinctively grabbed for Kelvin's hand. I don't know exactly, Charles Wallace said, but I think it's to find Father. Suddenly, two eyes seemed to spring at them from out of the darkness. It was the moonlight striking on Mrs. Who's glasses. She was standing next to Charles Wallace, and how she had managed to appear where a moment ago there had been nothing but flickering shadows in the moonlight, Meg had no idea. She heard a sound behind her and turned around. There was Mrs. What's-It scrambling over the wall. My, but I wish there was no wind, Mrs. What's-It said plaintively. It is so difficult with all these clothes. She wore her outfit of the night before, rubber boots and all, with the addition of one of Mrs. Buncombe's sheets, which she had draped over her. As she slid off the wall, the sheet caught in a low branch and came off. The felt hat slipped over both eyes, and another branch plucked at the pink stole. Oh, dear, she sighed. I shall never learn to manage. Mrs. Who wafted over to her, tiny feet scarcely seeming to touch the ground, the lenses of her glasses glittering. Come te piccole, follow amoro morso. Dante, what a grievous pain a little fault doth give thee. With claw-like hands, she pushed the hat up on Mrs. What's-It's forehead, untangled the stole from the tree, and with a deft gesture took the sheet off and folded it. Oh, thank you, Mrs. What's-It said. You're so clever. Un asno viejo sabe más que un potro. A Perez, an old ass knows more than a young colt. Just because you're a paltry few billion years, Mrs. What's-It was starting indignantly to say, when a sharp, strange voice cut in. All right, girls, this is no time for bickering. "It's Mrs. Witch," Charles Wallace said. There was a faint gust of wind. The leaves shivered in it. The patterns of moonlight shifted, and a circle of silver something shimmered, quivered, and the voice said, "I do not think I will materialize completely. I find it very tiring, and we have much to do." Well, folks, that's the end of the third chapter, and if that's not a cliffhanger, I don't know what is. A cliffhanger is a point in a story where you feel like you're at the edge of the cliff, and what's going to happen next, and you don't know, and it's so super exciting. So thank you for joining me for A Wrinkle in Time, Chapter 3, Mrs. What's-It, who we just met, who just almost materialized, not quite. It's very tiring for her to do that. So she may, I don't know if she ever fully materializes in the story. I can't remember. Well, I'll have to remember as we read along with the rest of it, which we will continue next week. In the meantime, I have some great music lined up for the rest of the show today. We're going to celebrate those vegetables in that vegetable garden that Sandy and Dennis have been planting at their house in the story. And maybe you've got a vegetable garden at your house or near your house. So we're going to celebrate peas and tomatoes. We're going to go to the farmer's market. And then we've got a hilarious song about mosquitoes, which... I hope you'll enjoy. I think it's going to be really fun to dance to. This is my first time that I ever heard it. It was just this morning on the way in, and I'm so glad I found this song, guys. Thanks for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. You're the greatest. Let's keep having fun because it's Saturday.
Just still on my plate. Oh, lonely peas, so green, so round, and so small. Oh, lonely peas, there's no one who loves you at all. There's no one who loves you at all. Till the peas are all gone. At the rate I am going, I'll be 91. Oh, lonely peas, so green, so round, and so small. Oh, lonely peas, there's no one who loves you at all. Some magic, they'll all disappear. Abracadabra, the peas are still here. Sing along with me, peas. So small, oh lonely peas, there's no one who loves you at all. I'm growing quite fond of these peas of my own, so how could I eat them? I'd be all alone. Oh, lonely peas, so green, so round, so small. Oh, lonely peas, there's no one. I know there is no one. There surely is no one. There's no one who loves.
loves you at all.
I dig a magpie by Teach Kelly and the Trent, phase one in which Coco gets a biscuit.
Monkey brains are thought by some to be a tasty treat, while others that I know prefer a dish of froggy feet. And what about those crazy cats who love to chew on worms? Don't they care about their taste buds? Don't they care about the germs? When you think about the crazy things that people try to eat, don't it make a plate of veggies sound like something rather sweet?
Hey, you!
Put them on your plate.
Give these a chance.
You don't have to say they're great.
Give these a chance. Don't have to jump for joy. Don't have to sing and dance. Why don't you take a little bite?
Give these a chance.
It's nutty all the things some people put into their faces. They eat chocolate-covered bugs sometimes in some exotic places. I knew a silly man who ate 10 goldfish on a dare, and there's a kid at Camp Wakanda who eats locusts by the pear. When you think about the crazy things that people try to eat, don't it make a plate of veggies sound like something rather sweet?
Hey, you!
Put them on your plate.
Give these a chance.
You don't have to say they're great.
Give these a chance. Don't have to jump for joy, don't have to sing and dance. Why don't you take a little bite?
Give these a chance.
Can you believe that some folks think a plate of tongue is quite a treat? And others believe honey ants feed hinds because they're sweet? It takes all kinds to make a world, but I'll tell you what I think. If you eat your veggies, you will see they really do not stink. When you think about the crazy things that people try to eat, don't it make a plate of veggies sound like something rather sweet?
Hey, you!
Put them on your plate.
Give these a chance.
You don't have to say they're great.
Give these a chance. Don't have to jump for joy. Don't have to sing and dance. Why don't you take a little bite?
Give these a chance. Put them on your plate.
Give these a chance.
You don't have to say they're great.
Give these a chance. Don't have to jump for joy. Don't have to sing and dance. Why don't you take a little bite?
Give these a chance. Give these a chance.
Put them on your plate. You'll love them.
Give these a chance.
They're round, they're green, they're good for you.
Give these a chance.
Lovely, lovely peas.
Give these a chance.
I love peas.
One, two, three. One day in the garden, I was walking past the lettuce and corn. The chives were chanting, chili peppers were dancing. Tomato, he was blowing his horn. The tomato talked to me.
your hat. Daddy's taking us down to the railroad tracks. A dollar in my pocket, gonna clap my hands, going to the farmer's market. Look at all those apples and peaches and pears, pineapples and plums, and look over there, a pumpkin truck. We better grab us one. We're gonna make a jack-o'-lantern and spook someone. Boo! I want a watermelon. I can't get along without a ripe watermelon. Cut a great big slice, stick my face on in. I come to the seeds, I go, ding. Get on the truck and grab your hat. Daddy's taking us down to the railroad tracks. A dollar in my pocket, gonna clap my hand, going to the farmer's market. Roasted nuts, we got chestnuts, walnuts, hickory nuts, and butternuts, a peanuts, you're a nut, and I'm a nut too. I tell you one thing, I like singing with you, and I'm gonna eat some sweet strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, dewberries, blueberries, gooseberries too. I tell you why, we'll take them all home and bake a 6-foot pie. Get on the truck and grab your hat, Daddy's taking us down to the railroad tracks. A dollar in my pocket, gonna clap my hands, going to the farmer's market. Rabbits and cute little pups. Someday I'm gonna get a dog of my own, put him in the truck and take him on home. Oh, the farmer's market sure is fun. Daddy, next week let's make sure to bring Mom. I'll show her that puppy with the big brown eyes. I'll give her a peach for a sweet surprise. Get on the truck, Daddy's taking us home. We got a lot of good food, now my money's all gone. But what's going on behind the fence over there? It's the flea market, Daddy, let's stop right here. To the farmer's market.
Here's some music to go to sleep by. Another song by Daryl Cherney.
We're getting eaten by mosquitoes. We are just like mosquito fritos. They like to nibble on our noses. They do not care about the closets, because their mouths, they go right through them. Sometimes they even stop to chew them. We're getting eaten by mosquitoes. Mosquito body, ole!
And when they nibble on our knuckles, it will not make you want to chuckle. And when they bite you on your ankles, it will not make you very thankful. And when they feast you on your forearms, they're gonna leave you with some sore arms. You're gonna wish you had two more arms.
Mosquito party, ole! Olé. And when you go out forest hiking, it will be greatly to their liking. And when you go out to the beach now, you'll always be within their reach now. If you're a loser or a winner, to a mosquito you're just dinner, and they're not getting any thinner. Mosquito party, olé!
We're getting eaten by mosquitoes. We are just like mosquito fritos. They like to nibble on our noses. They do not care about our clothes, because their mouths, they go right through them. Sometimes they even stop to chew them. We're getting eaten by mosquitoes. Mosquito body, ole! Mosquito body, ole! Mosquito body, ole!
Time. tell you a story about a spider's rainy day. I'll tell you a story how it sent her on her way. You better believe it, 'cause every word is true. I'll sing this song, but not too long. This one's from me to you. Could be quite so bold. You'd better believe it, 'cause every word is true. I'll sing this song, but not too long. This one's from me to you. The next day when she woke up, it came as no surprise. The golden web was filled with lots of yummy flies. She wrapped them up in silk and warmed them in the sun. Then the
we are at the end of Amy's Kids Show, and today we have been having some fun. I've been dancing around and all kinds of stuff, and we read a bunch of A Wrinkle in Time. We read the third chapter, and we met Mrs. Witch. And thank you for joining me for this story, because I really love A Wrinkle in Time, and I love Meg Murray, the lead character, because she's just like me when I was her age. I remember feeling just that way, you know, unpopular and awkward, and like I was always getting picked on, right? And I love the way that, you know, through the story, we learn that, you know, we can care too much what people think of us, right? And it can get in our way if we let it. And like Meg's brother, Sandy, one of the twins, Sandy, reminded her last week in chapter two, he said, "You don't have to take everything so personally. Use a happy medium, for heaven's sake." And a happy medium, that was really good advice, really, if you think about it. You know, because if we know we are wonderful and lovable, which you are, then it won't matter what other people think about us, right? And a lot of times we don't even realize that we are loved. Like, remember when Kelvin came in the story this week and he shared some of his experiences with his family, and he pointed out to Meg, you know, how lucky she was to have all those people in her family. And then she pointed out to him, "Well, you know, you're popular. Everyone at school likes you. What do you have to worry about?" And he was like, "Yeah, but it's not, those aren't real connections. I don't feel loved, you know, by those people for the right reasons, for who I am." Right? And so if we have the courage to stay true to ourselves, we will meet other people like us. And we'll be happier, because if we just tried to fit in and do what's popular or let what other people say about us or think about us, if we let that bother us and we let that change who we are, then we aren't going to be able to become the most amazing creatures that we're here to be, right? Who are you? You are a unique individual with some really cool stuff to share and to learn and to grow, and by making mistakes, and that's cool too. So, you know, loving ourselves and accepting ourselves is going to attract to us the people who feel the same way. And just like we learned from the rain song, the rain doesn't care whether you're popular or not. You'll get wet, right? And the mosquito song, the party, Mosquito Party Olé, reminded us that if you're a loser or a winner, to them, you're just dinner. So in the end, there are laws we all have to follow, folks. And it's so great here on planet Earth. Thank you for joining me, and happy Saturday. I hope you have a really good one. Happy summer, everyone. And enjoy the chickens. I love you guys. Take care.
WGDH Hardwick, 91.1 and 91.7.
This is Music is Art Radio, and I'm your host and producer, Ruku Murray. This show has been prepared in advance for airing and streaming on WGDH.